Kia ora. Welcome to the panel, RNZ National. Quite a bit on hugging today, actually. Hugging didn't seem to happen in my school friends' families either. I grew up in rural Southland. Maybe hugging was considered weak or even something that only weirdos such as hippies and soft Americans did. Beth in Invercargill says there. But just on that, because we've had a bit of response. Another one from Invercargill. Siblings didn't hug each other and still don't down here in Southland. But Connor, you're from Southland, aren't you?
I am from Southland. I'm born in Invercargill, and I've got 11 siblings, so I tick both those boxes, Wallace.
And so was hugging a part of your family? Bill English was part of your family, wasn't he?
So was
hugging a part of the English family?
A little bit. I wouldn't say that we were the huggiest people on the planet, but certainly there's plenty of affection amongst the family.
Yeah, very, very good. Okay, now today, local body elections over the weekend we discussed with our panellists. Also now there's a new political poll out last night. We discussed that too. The Australian government is to make roll bars on all new quad bikes mandatory within 2 years, should New Zealand follow course. Is there a danger that we're losing basic punctuation and shortening sentences down to a series of letters? And some school camps might be up in the air with the new voluntary donation scheme. With that, our question of the day today is, what are your memories of school camp? What do you make of them anyway? Jan says, a boy threw a big rock from a bridge into a waterhole and I just happened to be swimming under it. I was hit full force. The water hole turned red from the blood, like a scene out of The Omen. Teachers had a look at the wound and decided I may as well stay on at camp, hardcore. I've still got the lump on my skull to prove it. Still glad I didn't leave the camp. I loved it so much. So that's Jan's experience there. And Melanie says, getting blown in the middle of Lake Pupuki in a kayak when I was about 12 and having to be rescued by a Takapuna grammar boy. So lots of interesting responses. Text us 2101. With me today, poet and academic Carla Miller and Connor English, chairman of Agribusiness NZ. First up, though, briefly on this, Japan's rugby team might have helped lift the spirits of the huge numbers of people involved in the cleanup of the devastation caused by Typhoon Hagibis. The deadly storm claimed at least 31 lives and left thousands of residents stranded after it made landfall on the country's main island on Saturday. It's been recorded as one of the worst to hit the country in recent history and, of course, caused disruptions to the Rugby World Cup games, some of which were cancelled due to safety concerns, and tens of thousands of troops and rescue workers have been busy saving residents cut off by flood waters and clean-up. What do you reckon, Carl? I mean, did we underestimate the power of the storm? There were more headlines about the rugby match has been delayed and cancelled than there were about the potential devastation, wasn't there?
Well, I just wonder whether this is going to happen more and more because of climate change, to be honest. I don't know. It's very sad thing
yeah,
to happen.
Yes, because there are these super typhoons coming in. Someone commented, a bit mentioned, that we'll be having to sort of think about this in terms of preparation a lot more in the future.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Connor?
Oh, well, look, the weather, as we know, can cause massive devastation when it feels like it, and it's done that for millions of years. I mean, I guess a good part of the story, and it's tragic that, you know, these 30 people were, killed and no doubt many more were injured. But for Japan, the good part of its story, and I'm not being glib by this, is that Japan beat Scotland. And so they can all, wake up this morning and feel a lot happier about the rugby part of what's happening in Japan at the moment, but obviously, devastated about what the weather's doing to them.
It was almost the perfect response, to those who are critical of disruptions, wasn't it? Winning over Scotland to make it through for the first time ever to the Rugby World Cup quarterfinals. And, Carlo, it's always nice to see the smaller underdogs score winners. I mean, it was an aside from the typhoons, it was an extraordinary game and an extraordinary thing for Japan for this
absolutely,
to happen, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, wonderful. I'm not going to say anything about how many Tongans are in the Japanese team. Just quietly.
There's that too, huh?
Yep.
I mean, speaking of underdog, though, I mean, seeing Tonga do so well in rugby in the last sort of few years.
Well, we just beat the United States. Wahoo. Yeah, it's like the only platform in the world where we would meet the United States. So I'm pretty happy about that, too.
So have you been following the Rugby World Cup this time round, Carla? Or?
I just admitted to Wallace that this is the first time I've tapped into the Rugby World Cup, and so therefore I have no right to an opinion because everyone else around me are like following it avidly.
Yeah.
So I think I shall say nothing more.
Okay. Yeah. What about you, Connor? Are you
shame on me?
Have you tapped into this Rugby World Cup? And if so, has it lived up to your expectations or what?
Yeah, look, I have tapped into it, and I actually was one of the latecomers to the Spark app, and so I've been watching a few games on that. I think it has lived up to expectations, but I think the games coming up are going to be pretty good, and you talk about the underdog. I'm particularly looking forward to the Australians beating the English because the English are very confident and the Australians not quite so much, and it's always good to see the England team put in their place, hopefully. But I have really enjoyed it. But I have to say, Wallace, I also last year I also really enjoyed the Soccer World Cup. I was travelling a lot overseas and I was in hotels a lot and I was watching that. And again, over there they had the underdog and the local team, which was Russia, going a lot better than everyone expected. And it just adds an extra bit of flavour and energy to the whole competition, I think. And that's what's so great about Japan. I mean, I was really hoping that they would win, and it's great that they have.
Yeah, because you have travelled a bit throughout this part of the world, haven't you, Connor, you know, in terms of on business. So you can only imagine being in Japan, as a person who's a citizen of that country going, oh, my goodness, how far can this go for us?
Yeah, exciting.
Well, also it's something that they're not that familiar with. So to be, you know, it's like New Zealand when we're really good at something that no one's really heard of. We get behind the team, don't we? Because it's our team, it's our guys or girls out there doing whatever it is they're doing. So I think it's fantastic that they're going well. And I hope they beat South Africa, and they've done it before, and they can do it again.
4:13, you're on the panel now. Upsets, close calls, bigger diversity in some areas, returning faces. The local body elections happened over the weekend. In Auckland, Phil Goff cruised to an easy win over John Tamahere. In Wellington, somewhat a shock for Justin Lester after he was ousted just after a term by long-term councillor Andy Foster. In Rotorua, Steve Chadwick has secured a third term as Rotorua mayor, securing almost 2,000 more votes than the second-place candidate, Reynold McPherson. And Leanne Dalzell, now Leanne's back in Christchurch with 10,000 votes more than her nearest rival. And newly elected Nelson councillor Rachel Sanson called the Nelson election a woman quake, with 7 women elected to council. The previous council had 3 women on it. And Dunedin City Council voted in 35-year-old Green Party councillor Aaron Hawkins as mayor of their city. And then you've got Lower Hutt, elected New Zealand's youngest ever mayor, 28-year-old Campbell Barry. And Sophie Hanford, 18, the country's youngest new councillor. She has been elected to Kapiti Coast District Council and said political inaction over climate change compelled her to join the race. So, Carlo, one theme we've got coming through here, I suppose, is one of youth. It does seem that across the board there's a bit more youth involvement. Previously that would have been considered quite surprising in local body elections if you go back sort of 10 or 15 years. What's your take on this?
It's just so exciting seeing the leadership from our young people, especially on climate change, and to make the poll like so exciting. They're kind of saying we really need to see something happen here. So, yeah, I'm excited about that.
Any standouts for you, Carlo? Brickbats or bouquets when you look across the local body or your city?
I'm really happy that G.I. Joe, Josephine Marley, is back in. Yeah, she's from Glen Innes, you see, G.I. Joe. And Whaanana Efesua, that was really good to see some, and Al Filipina, some good Pacific candidates come through. They're all solid. And so, I was really happy to see that.
And in terms of Auckland, I mean, Phil Goff's back in, do you think that Auckland is, very general question, isn't it, but do you think that Auckland as a resident of Auckland is going in the right direction? Is it going in the right direction for Pacifica? What do you think?
Well, I mean, Phil's the consummate politician, isn't he? He's so experienced, and so he's kind of safe hands in that sense. But I would like to see him do a bit more substantial, especially around the issue of ihu mātou. I think three Pacific City Councillors is awesome for us. Like, that's kind of new. Previously, prior to this, these three being involved, we've had very little representation at that level. And you can see, especially at the local chair, you know, those boards out south, you've just seen huge amounts of Samoan participation especially.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's really important. Civic participation is just such an important part of being, you know, being active contributors to New Zealand and shaping the way we go forward. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Connor, what about you? What, in your part of the world, what did you make of the Wellington mayoralty race? Did you see Andy Foster's win?
Well, look, my wife Jo Coughlin stood for mayor last time, and there was eight people standing, and it was very hotly contested. And there seemed to be a lot more media coverage of it, and it was, and perhaps I'm a wee bit biased because I was involved and was more aware of it. But this time, it was almost like there wasn't really an election much. It just didn't seem to be in people's consciousness much.
Right.
But I think the thing that is a wee bit surprising is that you have got Justin Lester, who is a first term mayor. He's badged himself as a Labor mayor and had the Labor machine behind him, and then you got Andy, who, with all due respect to Andy, was just not well known by the general public that much.
Even though he was such a long-term councillor.
Yeah, well, yeah. I suppose he's more familiar than other people on the list, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a sense of malaise in Wellington, and Joe stood on the four lanes to the plains and two tunnels and toot for a second tunnel and all that sort of stuff. And maybe it was a bit early then, but I think now Andy's capitalised on that frustration with inertia in Wellington. And climate change, absolutely important, but it's not the only thing that people in Wellington care about. And I think that's been a wee bit of a misunderstanding by some of the politicians.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Carlo on Auckland City. How do you think that Wellington City, in your opinion, is on the right track? There's been a lot of, just from from what I've been hearing, what's been hit in the headlines, it's been the buses, it's been the shutting down of the town hall, the library, other issues. Is Wellington on the right track, in your opinion?
Well, look, I think Wellington is a wonderful city to live in and to bring up kids in. And so it's got some natural attributes that a lot of other cities don't have, and it's got a diversity about it that a lot of other cities don't have. So whoever's mayor can't quite kill that off, you know, even if they wanted to. So I think it's naturally on the sort of right track. It's just the influence that council has. And I think the last 3 years, you know, it has got transport issues. You mentioned the buses, but also the physical infrastructure. The reality is electric cars do need tunnels to drive through. You do need parking. There are, you know, issues around earthquakes. And, you know, the earthquake is a big challenge for a council. It doesn't really matter who the mayor is. Things just cost money.
Wouldn't matter what. It's a massive issue, isn't it? Particularly in Wellington with those insurance rates going up.
I think there'll be relief. And I think, honestly, there'll be some relief in Wellington that there's been a change of mayor, because hopefully there'll be some action rather than this endless discussion around let's get Wellington moving, for example.
Okay, well, let's go to another part of the country. We are now joined by a brand new councillor, 19 years of age, Rohan O'Neill Stevens. Kia ora, Rohan.
Kia ora.
Congratulations on your win.
Thank you.
Well,
how are you feeling? How does it feel? I mean, here's your, you know, you now have a seat on your city's council. Has it sunk in?
Yeah, it's all been quite surreal. It started to sink in today as I met with the mayor and was sort of toured through the buildings. But it's so incredible. I could sort of have processed it if it was getting in. We've got 12 seats. If it was getting in sort of 11th or 12th, scraping in, but to come in fourth place with over 9,000 votes.
Unreal.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, having only returned back to the country 4 months ago.
I know that part of the country really well. I've lived in Nelson for many years. You're very lucky living there, Rohan. But look, what I want to know is, how did you get involved? What made you get involved in local body politics? As I understand it, you were overseas, where it was in Germany, and you'd watch YouTube videos.
Yeah, I guess I've been involved in politics for since I was probably 14 or 15, more so in sort of environmental advocacy and activism. But I think, and it's a familiar theme against a lot of the young people who have run, is a lot of the reason I stood was frustration. Is this feeling of inaction and that our voices just weren't being heard. But I also see a really great opportunity. As you said, we live in a beautiful part of the country and we've got so much energy within our communities for change and for progress. And if we can, as a council, do everything in our power to make it easier for them to succeed and for us to succeed as a city, yeah, that's incredibly exciting for me.
What are you hearing, Carlo? Is this inspiring to you, knowing that someone who's 19 or so is on a city council? Is that inspiring to you? Or,
yes.
Or do you say to them, what the hell do you know?
I'm just like reading my notes here that says like 2/3 of rare ecosystems in New Zealand are threatened by collapse. And I'm like, holy hecka, maybe some people that give a crap about that and are going to work really, really hard. And councils are in real, and regional councils are in really strong positions of power. And very often, actually, they're amongst the main polluters, which is very, very problematic. So, yeah, we're watching that space, Rohan.
I think it's absolutely fantastic that Rohan has participated in democracy like he has. And it is great to get young people, old people, a diversity of life experiences. You know, because everyone, if it was all young people around the council table, or all old people, or all people who are school teachers or doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, you know, it's good having that diversity of view that they can bring their questions, bring their energy to. And I think you do get better outcomes. So congratulations, Rohan. I think well done to you.
Great to have you with us, Rohan, and all the very best for your career in local body politics.
Thank you very much.
All right, good on you. It's 24 past for you on the panel. Now, to this, it's quite an interesting topic, this one, and one that actually, it always gets quite a bit of response, and that is that of quad bikes. Now, the Australian government is to make roll bars on all new quad bikes mandatory within 2 years. The chair of the New Zealand Trauma Committee and from the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons, Lee Hsi, was quoted in an item by Jared Hutching on this issue, saying the same needs to happen in New Zealand. To quote, people are continuing to die or suffer horrific injuries as a result of quad bike crashes. Now, since 2006, 64 people have been killed on quad bikes while working, most of them farmers and farm workers. Fed Farmers President Katie Milne said it should be up to farmers, to choose whether to use protection devices or not. So look around the panel first. I think you might have answered it earlier, Carlo. Have you or have you not been on a quad bike?
Sadly, No.
They look like fun, but I'm going to put my hand up and say I have not been near one.
I wish. It's like on my bucket list.
It's on the bucket list, yeah, to do a bit of a bike along the G's. Connor, you have, huh?
Yeah, and look, this is an interesting one because I think the concern that some people have is that if you put on a frame, it actually can do more harm than good. But I think the technologies are developing and evolving now, and New Zealand should seriously look at it. And I know that there was all sorts of committees put together to review and look at what the best way it was to protect people on quad bikes, because when they tip upside down and you're underneath them, it's just a physical challenge, and you know 60 odd people haven't won that. So if you can have some device or whatever that adds to the protection of them, just like seatbelts add to the protection, they don't always save you, but they do add to the protection of the person in an accident.
Are they easy to tip? Like, have you ever tipped?
I have come very close to tipping
question.
On. Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, so I think what you find, a lot of those accidents, I think, often are when people are tired and at the end of the day, or when people are doing some crazy things, or sometimes, you know, just accidents just just happen. So it is going to, you are going to have accidents with those sort of vehicles, as you do with any sort of vehicle. So, yeah.
Well, as expected, a bit of response on this one. Tim says, I absolutely agree. My dad was stuck for 7 hours under his quad bike. Yeah. They are vicious. Mm. That's from Tim. Now, so, I mean, here's the thing, right? So I was reading that there are two key issues with quad bikes. One, there's very little space under it if it's upside down. Mm. And two, the centre of gravity is low, making it hard to push off if a rider is pinned under.
Yeah. So they're heavy too. They're very heavy as well.
So as I understand it, a roll bar would help, especially the modern iterations of roll bars, which are not the rigid ones, but they're kind of the more flexible ones. I can't understand, Connor, why New Zealand wouldn't follow the Australian recommendations and actually go for it. I mean, if we are seeing these sorts of vicious injuries or deaths, what's not to lose? What's to lose, rather?
Well, I think the concern that some people have is that what is to lose is more lives, that the roll bars might kill more people than they save. But we're not going to know that until we put them on these things. So I think you're right, Wallace. I think that they are doing it in Australia. I think technology has made advances in the last few years so that the roll bars aren't such so rigid and they don't kill you the same way if they are flexible. It should seriously be looked at again. But I know it's been an ongoing issue and concern for the farming community. Oh, absolutely.
Can I ask a silly question?
There are no such things as silly questions on the panel, Carlo.
But with all these kinds of things, it always makes me wonder about the economic impact on the community. How much more would it cost if everyone had to do this? Can the farming community afford to upgrade to these new machines?
That's a good question.
I appreciate the question, but the cost of these bars relative to the cost of the machine is a lot. It's minuscule.
So it's not really an issue.
Well, I think if they're new machines, the cost will be pretty low. Depending on what sort of technology is used, it might cost a bit to alter the machine, the original, quad bike to have some slots for these things to go into. That might cost a bit more, but if you're going to save someone's life, really, you're going to be the guy that hasn't done it because you saved $1,000? I mean, I just don't think that argument runs. I think what needs to happen is you need to be able to prove that these things do save lives and don't kill more people. And that's where the question mark still is, I think, in the minds of some people here in New Zealand.
Yeah, quite a bit of response from our sort of rural community here. Someone says, it's mandatory to wear a seatbelt in my car, so why not safety equipment on a quad bike? Another one says, quad bikes are as safe as any other vehicle when used correctly, but you can't save people from themselves. Muppets will always be Muppets. And that is one thing that is coming through, Connor, as well, that there is a way to use quad bikes. But I was actually thinking, in terms of enforcement, it'd be quite hard to enforce rules when you're alone on a farm.
Well, it's the same with bike helmets.
Yes.
It's the same issue, and that's a bit of a cultural thing. But probably the easiest way for me to answer this is, would I have one of these things on my quad bike? And for me, if I understand the advances in technology, the answer is yes. Absolutely. Because if you've got several, a very heavy bike coming on top of you, and it's just you and the ground and nothing in between, unless you've got something like that, you're going to be in trouble. Because it's not just the people that die; it's the people who get injured as well that are being affected.
And as you sort of inferred, Carlo, it's the community. When people have these terrible injuries and got to live with them, from one accident, it can affect families for decades. Mm.
But they're also right to say there are idiots. There's idiots on every sort of vehicle. There's idiots on those, stupid scooters that we have all around the city.
There is that too. What about Lime scooters? What about scooters? E-scooters, Carlo? You're a fan of those, no, away from quad bikes?
Well, because I always have my 2-year-old with me, always. So that just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It's 4:30. You're on the panel, RNZ National. To come on the show is our question of the day, and we've had a big response to this, which is this. What are your memories of school camp? Text us 21 01. You can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. I've got quite a doozy that I'll tell you right after these headlines with Paul Brennan. Who, can I ask you, Paul, do you have a memory of a school camp?
Yes, I do. fourth form, going back a long way, Mount Rupehu, bottom of the mountain, campground there. And, of course, we were the talkative ones. Teachers didn't like that.
No.
They said, if you talk tonight after 10, there'll be a punishment tomorrow. And, of course, we were caught. The punishment was, Mr. Rippon, I remember the teacher, Mr. Rippon said, you are climbing with me today to the top of Mount Rupehu as a punishment. Do you know, it was one of the best things that ever happened in my young life. And the banana skin that I left up there is probably still in the ice shelf around there somewhere.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I bet you didn't pick it up. Classic Paul Brennan. All right, headlines.